This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fun song to play drums to. Hey, man, it is Dukes and Bell on a Monday. We're going to talk to Ian Valentino in about 20 minutes.
I said Ian Valentino. Oh!
NFL writer for the 33rd team, bruh. Also, we got some guy talk. Did a lot of digging, man. I'm banged up today. I'm sore as a... Yeah, I mean, you can't smell this stuff, right? The THC?
No.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's kind of...
So you got like a VapoRub where through the nostrils?
I mean, again, I said to Chris, if you get close to your speaker, you may get a contact high for me speaking to you right now. But anyway, thanks to those guys. They're our sponsor. We can mention those guys, right? At the Georgia Hemp Company.
Oh, yeah.
They got good stuff. Anyway, more on that, or less on that, more on the Georgia Bulldogs. No other way to describe it. A humiliating defeat to the hands of Gonzaga, who in turn gets smoked by Houston. And then, of course, we also had the obligatory spring antics on four wheels. With that, let's talk some dogs. All right, Connor. Needless to say, Mike White can say, I got to the tournament. So how does the athletic director feel about this? I know he's got Dominique's son coming in. A lot of dog fans reminded us of that on Friday. But what did you think, and what does it mean about Georgia basketball?
Yeah, tough way to go out. You're down 27-3, 9 minutes into the game, pretty much open and shut, your time in the NCAA tournament. Now, that's a really good Gonzaga team. Do I think that the lights were probably a little too bright for Georgia? I do. Gonzaga has won a first-round game every year going back to 2008. That was Georgia's first time in a first-round game since 2015. I don't think the results should take away from what Georgia accomplished this season, but I do think it serves as a lesson that this program still has further directions to go. And I think, as successful as Georgia was this season, the act that follows is going to be more difficult because you're going to lose Asa Newell to the NBA draft. Silas Demery could be a very attractive player in the transfer portal in the event that he potentially enters. And so if you're able to retain the key pieces from this team, that leaves you in a nice step going forward. But the SEC is going to be a really good basketball conference every year now. It might not get 14 teams in every year, but you're going to have to work and have a top half of the league team to get into the NCAA tournament next year. And now that you've got this proof of concept, you need to continue to build off of that.
Okay, so when you were sitting there watching that game and you mentioned how bad the deficit got at certain points, when you look back and you sort of dish out the blame pie, so to speak, what percentage do you give to coaching, talent, and the players on the court?
I give Gonzaga a lot of credit. They were ready to go. I understand Mike White's, philosophy and, hey, we're going to try and pack the paint and let them shoot threes, and they just happen to make their threes. It was a Georgia team. I think they had 7 turnovers in the first 9 minutes of the game there. I don't know how.
10 in the first half.
Yeah, I don't know how you put that on Mike White. Silas Demery's got to have better ball handling, same with the rest of the team. And that was an issue with this team all season. So the things that I think you saw crop up there in that nine-minute stretch, like Georgia fans who have watched this team closely have seen Georgia, go prolonged stretches without scoring. Maybe you see Mike White call a timeout earlier when they're down 13-0 just to sort of compose the team a little bit better. But, it's a credit to Gonzaga, who's one of the pillars of the sport and, who gave Houston everything they could. And it was Gonzaga had a chance to tie the game with 10 seconds left. So I think that if you're Georgia, it's a helpful reminder of just, how far you've come, but also how much farther you have to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bitter pill because, 7 teams in the Sweet 16 is Connor Riley joins us, guys. Kate Connor Riley on Twitter from Dog Nation. We're going to talk football here in a second, but, the conference has elevated their game. Facilities, big-name coaches. And I just, you know, it's frustrating because, you know, the bitter side of this is, you know, he's going to be around for another year because it was there. Yes, it was an accomplice, but no, you got humiliated. It was the worst defeat of any major program, you know, in the tournament. And as you just said it, you know, do you get to build on this? You know, Ant-Man, I don't think people don't even realize that Anthony Edwards played for Georgia, you know, because you got to maximize it. You know, when the wheel spins around, you got to make that and take that all the way. So I'm hoping, and by the way, are expectations to the roof for Dominique's son?
No, he's not, you know, he's not a Dominique Wilkins type player. He's a guy who I think can come in and potentially contribute right away, but he's not going to be a player that I think Asa Nua was for this team. And, you know, you can talk about Anthony Edwards and what he brought to the program, but, like, they went, I believe, 16-16 his 1 year in the program. Mm-hmm. Georgia's in a much better spot moving forward with Mike White there. And I know you can throw a bunch of coaches' names out there with who you want to get, but at the same point in time, this is Georgia basketball. This isn't a program that has a long history of success. And yes, you see Ole Miss really going on a deep run for the first time in their program history. You see programs taking those steps forward. Georgia, just because of the way things ended with Tom Crean and the way things were, they're behind in that development scale. Yes, this Georgia team 3 years ago won 6 games throughout the season. And so for them to, I think, make the turnaround that they've made, that's encouraging. But they also know next season is huge for this program to see if they can sustain that momentum or if this is just going to be a once in every 2 years type thing.
All right, Connor, like the meme goes, explain it to me like I'm 5 years old. Why is Mykel Williams a top 10 pick on some draft boards and in the mid-20s on others?
I think it's, you know, the eye and the beauty of the beholder. There just aren't a lot of athletes like him. Now, I don't think that he wowed at his pro day. I was a little underwhelmed when he ran a 4.75 40 or 4. I've seen 4.67 get thrown out there by some scouts. It was not an overwhelming 40-yard dash and an overwhelming athletic showcase. And so maybe that knocks him down a little bit. He was very injured throughout the course of the season, and in hearing Kirby Smart speak about him during this draft process, calling him a warrior, praising the effort he had during fall camp, and I think you go back and you even watch that Clemson game prior to him having that injury, he was the best player on the field. So, you know, on talented teams, he found ways to be an impactful player, led Georgia in sacks as a true freshman. I think part of it is, you know, Georgia doesn't play their guys a certain way. You know, Trayvon Walker similarly entered the NFL with production questions. Now, Trayvon is a better athlete than Mykel is, but I think we've seen as well with Georgia and some of their players, especially those front seven guys, if you get them on the field, they will produce. You look at N'Kobe Dean this past year, obviously prior to his injury, he's huge for that Eagles defense, and even though they play a different position, I think there's a certain stock that is credited with Georgia right now, but obviously you can't just scout the helmet every single time.
All right, let's talk about the shenanigans. I know that it's something that Kirby does less than he wants to be talking about going into spring football is players getting arrested for speeding. I saw the article in Dog Nation. We talked about it on Friday, but what more can you add?
Yeah, Georgia has 2 players arrested last week, both driving-related offenses. Nitro Tuggle arrested for speeding early hours of Thursday, and then Marquise Easley had a pretty violent crash, and he ends up getting charged with reckless conduct and reckless driving there. And look, you know, like, yeah, does this happen at other programs? Sure. And is it followed and scrutinized to the same level? No. But when you have what happened at Georgia, where Devin Willock and Chandler LaCroix, a recruiting support staffer, die in a car crash after a national championship, it puts you under a different microscope. And I will say, I think Georgia has taken different steps this time around compared to a year ago. They publicly announced that Tuggle and Easley are suspended. I think everyone remembers, you know, the round and round we went with Kirby Smart about whether or not Trevor Etienne was going to be suspended.
Right.
I think they know now that, at least publicly, they have to show that they're taking a different stance to this. Because, you know, again, most programs in the country, you're not suspending a guy who gets arrested for speeding on a $26 bond. But Georgia, with this stuff, is not most programs at this point. And so I think they have to show, you know, and there have been those of us that have been saying this for a while, that you have to show a more serious face for this. Because I understand you want to protect these players. You don't want to punish them twice, once within the confines of the team and then once again in a court of the public opinion. But this keeps happening, and guys are just not getting those lessons.
How much push is there nationally from everything you're reading and seeing and reporting on for the cancellation of spring games altogether?
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing if this is just a one-year thing and it falls, you know, first year after the playoff. and we go and we change things there. You know, look, the college football game is becoming more and more like the NFL. I don't think that's a good idea. I don't like that. But we're seeing more and more NFL-style influences come in and impact this game. And you know, Matt Rhule was one of the loudest people and one of the first people to say, hey, Nebraska's not going to do a spring game. And a few other coaches have taken advantage of that. We still don't really know what Georgia's going to do in this regard. Kirby, I think, is intentionally keeping this very vague. And you look around the SEC, Texas A&M is the only one that's having their spring game broadcast by the SEC or by ESPN this spring.
Right.
And I think that just sort of speaks to where things are and where things are headed with college football. Now, look, Kirby's pointed this out, and I happen to agree with him. Not everyone likes spring practices, and I do wonder if, you know, you change the portal window to where there's just one once the season ends, if that opens things up and makes teams feel, okay, we're a little bit more set with our rosters. Let's go ahead and practice through the spring. That way we can sort of get those reps, knowing that everyone that goes through spring practice is ultimately going to be there.
All right, man. From a recruiting standpoint, my buddy Dale was asking, Jeff, and I should say ask Connor, and you got Jeff Santella's tweeted about it as well. But what's Jared Curtis? Who is he? And is he going to go with the Ducks of Georgia? Apparently he's a big quarterback prospect, and if you follow recruiting, you're a little in your bag right now.
Yeah, Jared Curtis, five-star quarterback, number one quarterback in the country for the 2026 cycle. This time a year ago, he committed to Georgia. It looked like everything was going to be nice and easy, but, you know, as high school recruits often do, sometimes they take a step back, and that has been the case with Curtis. It's been a long, drawn-out recruitment, but we know today that it is going to be coming to an end on May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. He's set to announce his decision between Georgia and Oregon, and as far as I believe, a decision in this has not been made yet. I know that there are a lot of maybe Georgia fans out there, well, if Oregon's involved, Oregon's just going to outbid Georgia. I don't necessarily believe that's going to be the case. I think Georgia is not going to get outbid for Jared Curtis in that regard. They're going to have a plenty competitive offer in that regard. He's from the Nashville area. His competition's not great, so I do think that there'll be a question of how quickly he could potentially play at the collegiate level as he makes that adjustment in competition. But it's a Georgia-Oregon battle, and as we sit here today over a month out, I don't believe that a decision has been made yet. And so how Georgia finishes this out, I think it's fascinating for what it says about Mike Bobo, because if you're able to land a product or a prospect of this caliber in Curtis, that's a pretty strong indication of belief in what he can do going forward.
All right, big guy, we'll be following, man. Could it be the final G-Day game ever in Athens? Stay tuned on that one, and appreciate the time, brother.
Yep. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Chris.
You got it. K. Connor Riley on Twitter. That's Connor Riley from Dog Nation. Guys, this hour of the show is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. We got more to dive into. We're going to talk to Ian Valentino. Oh, from the 33rd team. Really cool website. See if he's got any insight into what Aaron Rodgers. Good luck with that. Man, anybody know what Aaron Rodgers is going to do. But the Steelers, I think, are kind of like, let's go. It's go time, show time. And then, of course, there's some ramifications here in Atlanta. Because if he goes there and then Russell's left, well, then where does our Aaron Rodgers get traded to? We'll pick his brain right here on Dukes and Bell coming up. It is funny, man. We have a great relationship with our sponsors. Just talking about overdoing it today or overdoing it over the weekend. And today, having enough of that Georgia Hemp Company 1,500 milligram palm, the relief pain stuff on me. And then Joe was listening from Georgia Hemp Company. Hit us up on social media. So, yeah, man. It works for me.
He was watching.
Listening. Well, not judging, not Joe Salami. But anyway, it's funny because I knew Joe back. Remember, Oren worked with us back at the old station back in the day. But yeah, we really do use our sponsors' products, some more than others.
Yeah.
Hey, man, we got lots to dive into today, including some guy talk coming up. Falcons, what's going on with Kirk Cousins? Maybe our next guest can shed some light, if anybody can figure out where this is going to go, because Albert Breer had some interesting things to say today about Kirk Cousins is want to go somewhere where there's going to be no one overlooking his shoulder, but where's that going to be in this world, you know, at post-draft? That's what none of us can understand. See if Ian Valentino from the 33rd team can make sense of it. You see anybody trading for Kirk Cousins? And we have to take a lot of money off his contract to make it work, but Ian, you see anybody making a deal?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm looking at this Aaron Rodgers situation, and I think that's the logical outcome, right, is that Rodgers picks his spot, which it kind of seems like it's going to be Pittsburgh. And then it just leaves the Giants, right? Like, depending on what Russell Wilson decides, either Cleveland or the Giants, and I don't know, it kind of seems like he might be leaning towards Cleveland. So I'm looking at one of those two teams as the most obvious choices. And then I'm going to say, well, if Cousins wants to wait till after the draft, there's almost that incentive to just say, can we wait until training camp? Can we wait until preseason's over? And then is there an injury that maybe opens the door somewhere that we're not expecting? And I think from the team standpoint, even Kirk Cousins' standpoint, I think they should both want to kind of see this play out. If they're both dedicated to moving on at some point, but they don't feel like it has to be May 1st that it gets done, then I think you can probably stretch this out a little bit, unless if the Giants or the Browns or they want to come to you and say, hey, you know what? I don't want to mess with this any further. I'll give you that third round pick in 2026 and we'll just make it happen. But outside of that, I almost think they can kind of slow roll this a little bit and try to build up his value through desperation.
Yeah, I would even argue, Ian, as long as he's a good soldier and plays ball, if it's week six, week seven, as long as it's before the trade deadline, if there's a team that's, 7-1 and loses their quarterback, he's instantly the best option available on the market, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, and you know, look at like a team like Miami, like with Tua Tagovailoa, all of his injury issues, that's a coaching staff that has to win next year. And you start to get into that trade deadline section, and it's like, well, more and more teams are going to be feeling that kind of pressure to keep winning or to start winning, maybe even like Indianapolis. You know, I know they brought in Daniel Jones, but like, come on, if they start going sideways, yeah. I mean, I think you'd feel a little bit better with Kirk Cousins there. So I think, you're right. If you can continue to drag this out a little bit more, the absolute worst case is you've got probably the best backup in the league. So, and they've already eaten the cost. So it is what it is. I think at this point, considering those things, they're pretty much operating from a place of strength. Make these teams get a little antsy and put the fire under them a little bit.
Yeah, the quarterback situation around the league. I mean, Russell Wilson, we know that. I guess he's the next one. So the Giants, I guess the question would be, because that was one of our destinations, as Ian Valentino joins us, they've got their guy. Are they going to draft Shador Sanders? I mean, Jameis is the backup. There'd be no market for Kirk Cousins with NYG, right?
I still want to leave that door open. It depends, though, right? Like if Cleveland passes on Shador, then I think Shador is going to the Giants, right? So then that does close the door. But I think Shador goes to Cleveland, and then that probably closes that door for Cousins, or at least, unless if the price is dirt cheap. And I don't see that happening. I think Cleveland would absolutely love to get, have their cake and eat it too. But I don't think they're going to pay the price for what that would take. I think they're happy if they can just get one more vet. I've seen Carson Wentz's name thrown out there. I think that's on purpose, right? I don't think they want to make the deal for a third-round pick. So the Giants are interesting. I know they got Jameis, but if the price is right for them too, I mean, they're probably the most desperate coaching staff in the league. Like, I don't think they have the room for error. So I think if they could, they know Jameis Winston can be a good soldier. He was a good soldier last year in Cleveland as a backup, was a good soldier in Tampa Bay too, being a backup in New Orleans as well. So I think he's okay because he didn't get paid like a starter. So I think that's going to be a little bit of a factor there. It just has to be the right price. And obviously they said what they needed to by signing Winston, and not just moving that third-round pick. But at the same time, to me, that wasn't enough of a big enough contract to say that they're completely out of this.
All right, so you mentioned Aaron Rodgers probably going to Pittsburgh. What's the ceiling there if he does go? I would argue at best, second-best team in the division. And then are they a legit threat to make a deep playoff run?
Yeah, I think that's fair. If they get the T.J. Watt that we know T.J. Watt can be, then I think they are a threat. They are a contender. Like, I don't want to overstate what Aaron Rodgers is at this point in his career, but he was still better than Russell Wilson was last year. So, and he did it on a team that's probably worse. So I think if you put him in that ecosystem, everyone plays a little bit better in Pittsburgh. It's not going to automatically make them, a Super Bowl contender. I think it puts their ceiling a little bit closer to that, though. And it's a team that you don't want to play anyways, because they'll grind out wins with, some of the worst quarterback play in the league over the last couple of years before Wilson got there. So they're a scary team. I think that they become, probably a solid tier two team where they would need a lot, right, to get past the AFC, championship round. But they're at least a threat to get there, and that's better than what they were last year. So for them, why not? Like, they still need to take a quarterback of the future too, and I think they're going to be looking there at 21, depending on who's at the board. But it definitely takes the immediate need away, and it is an upgrade for them.
We were talking about it earlier. Ian Valentino joins us, guys, from a really cool website, 33rd Team, about Aaron Rodgers. And I was just playing devil's advocate, a role which I don't really embrace generally, but I was saying, was he really to blame for all of the things that happened with the Jets? The owner's nuts, probably pulled the trigger way too early on Robert Saleh. Jeff Ulbrich wasn't ready to be the owner. To be the head coach once the owner made that move. But the defense, it was kind of just there. statistically, didn't really do much. They do have some great weapons on offense. So how much should you really blame Aaron Rodgers for what happened last year?
Yeah, you want to be careful because, you know, is he the common denominator for these things that go sideways, or is he just kind of the victim of what you said? This is 60-plus years of Jets, you know, just being, you know, incompetent. Right. Like I don't really know. I don't think he's the problem, but I don't think that he's a guy that's going to turn the ship around when it's already kind of sinking. I think he's kind of found this weird spot in his career where he's just such an odd guy. I don't know that he's toxic. I don't think that Russell Wilson is either. Like, some of these vets are getting this label. I don't think he's a solution, like, in the locker room anymore. He's not going to galvanize the guys. But I also don't think he's alienating them either. It seems like his former teammates, you know, kind of like him still. So I think there's enough there to say, like, he's not the sole focus of why that team went wrong. But if I was a weaker franchise than, like, the Steelers, I don't know that I'd be interested in him. Like, I don't think that the Giants should really be that interested in him because I don't think he's the solution there.
I keep seeing him going higher and higher. Do you think Jackson Dart is a first-round pick?
I think he will be, yeah, because you're going to have those teams, like either the Giants are going to miss on Shedeur Sanders, or you'll maybe get the Saints. The Steelers make a ton of sense, I think, at 21. I think that's the spot for him, which we did that a couple years ago, too, with Kenny Pickett, where it's like, okay, if anyone's going to take a first-round quarterback, it's going to be the Steelers and Pickett. That's exactly what happened. It didn't work out, obviously, but there's enough teams even at the top of the second round, if the Browns end up going with Carter or Hunter at number two, and then the Giants take Shedeur, well, then the Browns have the ammunition to just move in front of Pittsburgh to go get Jackson Dart. I think that makes a lot of sense for them to try to do that. So I have a hard time imagining the team won't, because we saw it with Bo Nix. I think Bo Nix was maybe a slightly better prospect, but not significantly so. So many quarterback needy teams. I mean, even if you got a team like the Raiders, I know they traded for Geno Smith and gave him a little bit more money there, but he's, you know, mid-30s at this point. Like Pete Carroll, I could totally see being aggressive with that move. And if it's going to cost you like a second round pick next year, it's not a huge cost for a guy. You've got to love him. But if it's not going to be an enormous move, I could see teams moving up for him, even if Pittsburgh does pass on him, yeah.
It's pretty funny, Ian, while we're talking to you, the NFL Network is running highlights of arguably the greatest game last year. That's the comfort-behind victory to overtime with Kirk Cousins over Tampa Bay. And it's like, man, and I was down there for the Tampa game, we won on the road. It's just inexplicable how it went with him. What do you think about Michael Penix Jr.? We've had this discussion, and not trying to be Debbie Downer, I mean, everything sort of points in the right direction. He had a bad interception against the Commanders, but then he also did enough to win that game, which would have maybe extended our season. What do you think of Penix Jr.? What's a realistic expectation since Jaden Daniels has raised that bar so high?
Yeah, you want to be a little bit careful because Daniels did so well, and he'll probably come back to earth just a little bit. That's just totally normal to have that sophomore slump. I think because Penix didn't get a ton of time on the field, you're hoping that he comes out and plays pretty well. Like, he's got the skill set to do it. Super smart guy. Everything there projects for him to be a good player, I think, pretty early in his career. And so you want to see this growth for him next year where he's going to have some of those lumps across the way, but you want him to be a better player at the end of the season than he was at the start of the season. But I think he'll come out and actually play at a decent level. I thought he looked good last year. I mean, I think expectations have to be realistic. He's not going to be Jaden Daniels. Just no one's ever really done that, or very few guys have ever done that. So can he come out and be, you know, a little bit better than Bo Nix at the start? I think so. I think that's a fair expectation. Can he be a league average quarterback by the end of his, you know, first starting season? I think absolutely. That should totally, you know, be in realistic range for him because he's got so many weapons around him. I think the defense will be a lot better next year just from having some continuity, getting another offseason, adding guys to that front. And those things kind of add up, and it creates more of an ecosystem for him where he doesn't have to take on quite as much, and it's not going to be as turbulent as, oh, shoot, you know, we just had to, you know, bench our veteran quarterback that we paid all this money to. And yeah, I think he was ready for the moment. But I think the confidence that comes with, okay, you're the starter for an entire like off season, and you're coming into camp. It's not questioned. We're not going to worry about you at all. We're going to, you know, shuffle some things behind you, maybe with Cousins, but you have the full support of the organization. So I think that's going to be seen. Like, I think that's something, especially for him. He's got so much experience on the field. That's going to help him kind of overcome those turbulent times. Like you talked about, like the interceptions. Like, this is going to help him bounce back more than anything. He's going to fall back onto, that experience and overcoming all the things that he's experienced, which is more than most quarterbacks have gone through to this point in his career. So, yeah, I think you're looking at probably an average level quarterback next year, and you're going to be pretty happy with that. And as long as it's peaking towards the end of the season, then the future is going to be bright.
All right. With all that said, Ian, the Falcons just need a top blank defense in order to win the NFC South. 15, 20?
I think 15 is pretty fair. Yeah, I think so. Like, the secondary looks better. They've got a great pick this year, you know, middle of the first round. They should be right in the realm of getting a pass rusher or even like a cornerback if they want to go that route. You know, I think this is going to be a better year for some of those veterans too that they picked up that maybe last year didn't show out as much as we had hoped. So it's, the division's looking pretty down, and I think I was probably too high on a couple teams last year, and Atlanta was right in that mix.
Right.
So I think they're in a better spot this year, and I don't think that anyone else in the division's done enough for me to be too worried about them.
Teams are always rising and falling, Ian. You know, like the 49ers, what are they going to look like now with the roster moves? Detroit's got new coaches at offense and defense. You know, maybe the Bears are on the way up. Commanders, everybody's sweetheart. By the way, we were 27th worst defense the year we went to the Super Bowl. That was a year we nailed the draft, had three starters. We still gave up a lot of points, 25.4 a game. I could see that kind of being our business model for this year. I'll lean on the offense and just defense be good enough, to Chris's point.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what Washington did last year, right? Like, they didn't have the most talent in the world, but they overcame it with timely playmaking, and they did get better when they needed to, and obviously Daniels was part of that, but, like, I don't think that's an out-of-the-realm possibility. We see it, like you said, we see it every year. There's teams that ebb and flow, and sometimes you get a little bit of a fluky bounce back, and I'm not saying it's going to be a fluky year, but, like, if you win 11 games and you come out of the division, like, that's a foundational base. Now, you still have to rebuild some things because you got some older players at certain positions, but, like, the offense is young. It's a good unit. That's what you're going to build around. I think you're right. I think you're just getting – you need the defense to be opportunistic, and that's the key to a turnaround. If you can force more turnovers, force more sacks, the two things that have kind of plagued this defense for too long, if you can create impact plays, I don't care if you give up 400 yards a game as long as you're forcing an interception or two and a fumble, and then you're totally switching how the game, you know, plays out compared to how it has over the last few years. So I think that it's getting that more of that balance, and the turnovers are a little bit luck-based. You can't really do much about that outside of just getting as good of talent as you can. But I think they enter this draft saying, we can just attack the defense. We don't have to worry too much about the offense. We're only looking for maybe one or two spots with depth. And if we can throw all of our assets to that side of the ball, we're going to hit, no doubt about it, we're going to hit on at least one or two guys.
Right. That's the hope. That's the plan. Hopefully Fontenot can make it happen, man. All right, Ian, we'll talk to you soon, maybe one more time before we get to the draft.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks so much.
You got it. Check out the website, guys. 33rd Team, Ian Valentino. We'll come back. A legend, a beloved American sports figure passes over the weekend. We'll give you some audio, some legendary audio from that. And the Braves, moving on from Ian Anderson. It's all coming up. It is Dukes and Bell, man. This hour of the show is brought to you by Mark Spain. And should you ever really pencil in your hairline? What coach did and, well, took a lot of heat during March Madness, we'll explain. Where to play is play on a Monday. Carl will be back tomorrow. He's been out in Vegas having some fun, and it's fun because it's tournament. You ever been out there for that time of year? It's just bananas, and there's just so many great sports books. Indoor, outdoor now. We're talking about Circa, where Andy and Randy were earlier this year when the Falcons played the Raiders, I should say, last year. So, yeah, man, good time, fun time. Had $20 on St. John's to win it all, so that went so,
well,
but I didn't go heavy. I mean, it's a small bet Carl plays for me.
My question is going to be, will Mr. Dukes' mood be dictated tomorrow by how he did or did not do?
Well, I mean, either way, he's going to, you know, big baller. Oh, I killed it. I crushed it. You know, Carl's. We'll see. Place your bets on that one, but I'm sure he had a great time.
Is he going to come in wearing the shades that he wore on Bally's that one day?
When we called him Black Ice.
Black Ice, yes.
For those who never saw when Carl's on FanDuel Sports, you know, you formerly Bally.
Oh, yes.
He had that the suit with the zip up and the shades, and we started calling him Black Guy.
So he says they're for vision. He can't see the screens when he's at Bally. So,
but they're tinted.
They're tinted.
Yeah,
they're very fashion forward.
So I'll stop talking because I know there's always some provocateurs out there that'll then get to go, my good God, are you talking crap about your glasses? We'll save it to say it to his face tomorrow.
Hang on a second. If you can't rag on those you love. Who
right.
You gonna,
no, no, but you gotta, gonna, but, you, but unfortunately, can, but again, the audience, yeah, there's always those, you know, those turds. You know,
hey, we found out they were for vision, and right. We didn't stop making fun of them for
I
it
know,
either.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like when we do the Fricky impression, then by the time Fricky comes on tonight, oh man, Dukes and Bell, they were talking this. because everyone always amplifies in terms. Same thing happens with Bo, with Squidbilly. If we do anything about Squidbilly, like, I'm the meat man. Boom! Almost instantly, somebody will reach out to Squid.
Well, I don't know. The audience. I know we've mentioned this before, but Squidbilly literally makes his producer stay here every day until Dukes and Bell starts get the intel on the station.
I mean, I got to tell you. So you're feeling that Dylon is a sleeper agent for the morning shift?
He sits in the
corner. And the assistant brand manager?
Dylon gets here at 4 o'clock in the morning and
recording
leaves
things.
And leaves at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the guidance of one Squidbizzle.
And nothing looks better than a black Louie with black aviators walking on that plane.
Catch the morning shift with our man, Bo Morgan, Tiff, and Big Mike Johnson, right here on 99. By the way, his lovely wife, Amy's about to pop, so a little baby Squidbilly will be coming soon right to our world. Hey, man, a couple of things real quick. We mentioned Carl, and he'll be here tomorrow. He'll have some strong thoughts on George Foreman because Carl worked in Houston for many years, legendary talk station before he came to Atlanta and started 92.9 The Game. But he knew George Foreman better than I did. We got a chance to interview him a few times out in Vegas as part of, you know, championship fight weekends. But who didn't love George Foreman? Especially, you know, when he came back, I mean, to be a two-time heavyweight champion. But for me, for certain people of a certain age, when the heavyweight division, and yes, there are certain things, guys, and I don't think anyone would debate it, especially if you don't even follow the heavyweight division because you don't know anybody. You follow UFC, maybe. But it was better then. You had a dozen guys that could knock everybody's lights out. I mean, it was Ron Lyle would have been the seventh best guy. It was amazing. But one a moment that stands the test of time in Kingston, Jamaica, Howard Cosell with the call.
Angie Dundee, Ali's trainer right next to me, is saying it. You may hear him. Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! The heavyweight champion is taking the mandatory 8 count, and Foreman is as poised as can be in a neutral corner. He is as poised as can be. We have a minute left in this first round, and already this fight is proving out what some have expected.
Man, I still get goosebumps. It's hard to explain when the TV stopped at 13 and the wide world of sports, and they'd have these interviews where Ali would be there, and they'd be talking about him, and obviously him and Frazier. But then all of a sudden, if you saw the Michael Mann movie Ali, he's getting ready to fight Joe Frazier, and then boom, Joe Frazier gets knocked out into like the next week by George Foreman down in Jamaica, which then sets up the rumble in the jungle. I'm a big Michael Mann guy. I love that movie, but it's tough because George is kind of, he's not really a character, and it's obviously the Ali show, but getting to talk to George Foreman was a big thrill, but I'm sure Carl will have a great takes on him. And then, of course, how he just was able to, you know, maximize his amazing personality and charisma. And who doesn't still have a George Foreman grill somewhere in their house?
Do you know the famous backstory behind that?
Yeah, Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, it was actually supposed
to be. He passed
to
on it, right?
Yeah, well, you know what? It's funny. He's come out and said that's not exactly what happened.
Or it's because they didn't get enough money for the deal.
No, he said that. So his agent called him and left him a voicemail.
Right.
And he didn't get home in time to respond.
Ah.
And by the time he got home, George Foreman had taken the grill.
Was he gone for like 4 days?
No,
what the
he
heck?
Said he was at like a sporting event for his son.
Let me tell you something, brother. I had this event with my young Hulkster, and then I surely regret that. Let me tell you something. Poor Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the George Foreman grill, I know I want to say I had at least four. You know, because eventually, you know, if you're supposed to treat them the right way. I never did. So it would lose the stick. And again, I'd put the grilled chicken cutlets on it.
I still have the griddle. The griddle is amazing.
Yes. I mean, you know what? We may do dust off the last call tonight.
Okay.
For did you have a George Foreman grill? Or as Randy McMichael always says, his house is full of it, as seen on TV products.
Yes.
Do you have any of those in your house? Because some of you can't resist.
And it's crazy, like his career, like you want to talk about a career in the spotlight.
Mm.
He broke onto the scene earlier than 68 with the Olympics. So you talk about all that time under the national spotlight, and he did it in such a lucrative format with the George Foreman grill at the end.
But I mean, you watch, you know, we always talk about Hagler Hearns. Watch George Foreman and Ken Norton. Watch George Foreman and Ron Lyle. I mean, you can't even, it's hard to imagine. And then the punishment that Ali takes in Rumble in the Jungle with the rope-a-dope is just mind-blowing. But yeah, there's a certain period of time, and that's my childhood. And remember, my dad loved Muhammad Ali, was a huge fan. And it was so special to see those Howard Cosell interviews. You know, Ali, you're being truculent. You know what I mean? I thought that John Voight did a great job playing him in that Ali movie. I know it goes on a little long for some folks, but I've never felt like, oh, man, 3-hour movie. Well, where else are you going to go? If it's good, it's good. Watch it. Enjoy it. Hey, man, March Madness continues. And one of the moments that I think a lot of folks took some pleasure in, if you don't like Dan Hurley, And he makes it very easy to not like him. One of the best coaches in the tremendous win streak in the tournament for UConn comes to an end. He does an interview with Tracy Wolfson. And, Oren, is the audio bleeped out?
It is.
Yeah, he was doing an interview with Tracy Wolfson. Meanwhile, Baylor's about to get on the floor for the next matchup, and he's upset with the refs. We'll take a listen. A lot of ambient noise if you can't make it. Hope they don't blank you like they blanked us. Hope they don't blank the Bears like they blanked the Huskies. Needless to say, that was embarrassing. And this is a guy that a lot of media types are calling out, saying, look, will you get it under control? Because you're starting to sound like a complete jackleg and you're starting to embarrass the university. But wait, there's more. Now we find out that UConn's, I guess, SID or communications director apparently threatens a reporter who captured Dan Hurley's comments about the officiating.
Yeah, told him he's going to ruin his life.
Whoa.
Ruin his life.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
That's a giant
The SID
negative.
Said that because he apparently the guy who had the phone and filmed the moment was right. In an area where he wasn't supposed to be, and he was recording
Hey,
that.
Guess what? Right guy, right time. So be it.
So, yeah, he reached – now, he deleted whatever he said about him afterwards. But, yeah, it was confirmed by other reporters that, like, yeah, he said he was going to ruin his life.
Let's see. Programs communication director, according to Awful Announcing, is Bobby Mullins. He asked for the video to be removed. According to Gabe McDonald of Charlotte Sports Live, Mullins allegedly threatened the man, saying he would, yes, ruin his life if the video wasn't taken down. Ruin his life?
I mean, listen –
You're an SID, dude.
But you know what? Representing a pro. Here's the bigger picture problem, though. You're both of them are representing a program that's not just some of these mid majors that we've been talking about. You're the 2-time national champion defending in such, and you need to act as such in order to portray your program the right way. That is not doing
it. Right. And the guy's name is Joey Ellis of Queen City News making his bones. Right. Nice piece of video, as we said, Johnny on the spot. Hell, man, when Hank Aaron crosses the dish for 7:15 at Fulton County, you know, standing there with the tape recorder, it's
our
Craig
guy.
Sager.
Yeah.
Craig Sager in a trench coat, looking like Mike Wallace. He wasn't supposed to be on the field. He wasn't supposed to be in Atlanta. He was doing TV in Fort Myers at the time.
Right so, guy, right place, right time. It's iconic.
Yeah. Right on, man. But anyway, yeah, it just Dan Hurley. I love Bobby. We always have a great time talking to Bobby at the Final Fours. But Dan just, man, he just rubs a lot of folks the wrong way. Speaking of rubbing people the wrong way, give me that Rick Pitino explanation for why he sits the Big East Player of the Year. He was having a terrible shooting day. But instead of just saying, look, the kid was struggling shooting, Rick Pitino gets defensive with questions about how he lost this game. Take a listen.
Played 30 minutes. It's a long time.
So he was tired?
No. Played 30 minutes, and I went with other people. You already know the answers, Roger. You're asking leading questions. You already know it. So don't ask leading questions. You already know why he didn't play.
Was there one play with RJ that made you sit him the last 5 minutes?
You know he was 3-for-17. You know he was 0-for-3. So you're answering your own. I'm not going to knock one of my players.
I said it earlier to Chris. I was like, yeah, Chris Mullin's not walking through that thought. Walter Berry's not walking through that thought, pal. And if I had him, I'd put him out there because this guy was ice cold. It's kind of like Pat Riley with Starks, right?
Yeah.
Just keep shooting. Either one way or the other. That's your best. It's one of your best players.
Well, if you needed a soundbite to perfectly encapsulate who Rick Pitino is,
right?
There it is.
Well, that's the thing. I got a kick. I was pimping that TV show the last couple of weeks. I've gotten, you know, more kind of, again, speaking of like sports nostalgia for the Big East, but obviously the SEC just rolled through it. And credit to John Calipari. He's got a bigger front court. St. John's had no answer for it. And every night for Arkansas, somebody else is stepping up. So that's why it's just been an unbelievable series, man. 7 teams of the Sweet 16 from the SEC. We talked about it with Connor Riley earlier. Real quick, this is more of a visual, so I'll do my best to explain it here in Guy Talk. I retweeted the video at Mike Bell, ATL. There's a cool website. It's called Everything Georgia. You ever see it?
Yeah.
A lot of cool stuff. Now, I don't know if somebody can take a guess what exit this is. It looks like I-20, somewhere out rural. But if anybody knows, Everything Georgia, I just retweeted it, Mike Bell, ATL. Must have been some bad traffic. People just literally pull off the interstate and roll up on the grass and make their own ramp after they miss the ramp. And I'm like, basically, monkey see, monkey do. Everybody does it, like 7 or 8 cars. Last time I've seen anything like this video, it was during the ice storm of 14, and Bo Morgan, Squidbilly, picked me up in Midtown, and his truck's got low 4, and we were on the interstate trying to get to the airport to get to the Super Bowl, and there were 18-wheelers was going the wrong way, going north, southbound. It was just bananas. And a bunch of people, there was a hole in a fence, Orin, right across from Turner Field. And the old Turner Field, now it's where Georgia State is. But we cut squidges. I said, follow that, go! And we followed this convoy. It was crazy, going through the grass and over hill and dale. Made it to the airport. Then we find out, yes, our pilot's not here yet. He's like, coming from Peachtree City, where I live now. But anyway, but check out the video. If anybody can figure out what exit that is, it's at Mike Bell ATL. All right, real quick. I do the commercials for NA Hair Restoration. You heard me talking about Carl does commercials for it. That's your hair. You go get your hair, and they put it where you don't.
Yep.
What you don't do, if you don't have your hair growing, is basically take a Sharpie and try to, like, grow in a hairline. Did you see what happened to the Liberty coach? I think you and I missed this on Thursday and Friday. The coach is named Richie McKay of Liberty, and he's kind of got, remember Bundini Brown, speaking of Muhammad Ali, the old hype man for Ali? He had, like, sort of like the Oscar Gamble poofs on one side of his head, but he was bald in the middle.
Well, that's kind of Jamie Foxx, yeah.
That's kind of what Jamie Foxx's character is. That's what the hair looks like. Well, Richie McKay of Liberty, he took it upon himself to kind of color it in where it's thin in the middle, and it looks about as natural as when Rudy Giuliani was sweating that dark colored stuff down the like side of his head.
Greasy coming down his face, yeah.
So, well, anyway, he got a lot of heat. He's 59 years of age. And, look, I get it. You want your hair to look good, but you know, just go get the hair. Don't do that.
So he basically has, like, to visualize it, he has one little puff that stands on top in the middle. On the sides, where it's not as high, but it's completely colored in. If you guys can picture this for me, remember when Carlos Boozer came back with the hair? That's what he has spackled in between the gaps on the front of his hair.
Now, real quick, his daughter says, by the way, he's a great guy, and all you haters can go blank off, because she's standing up for her dad. I can tell you this. I used to use this stuff before I got to the hair guys from Nene. It's called Topics. A lot of guys in TV use this stuff. It's basically, like, remember Etch-A-Sketch?
Yeah. Oh, the little shake it, you know, or like you remember, shake, yeah.
Or not
Woolly, the Woolly guy, whatever it was.
Not Etch-A-Sketch. The thing you use with a magnet. These are like
Woolly guy.
It's like silicon particles, and they match it to your hair color. A lot of guys in TV use this stuff, but if you're in the wind and you don't have enough hairspray, you're screwed, because all of a sudden, the funny part is, when I was still doing TV and stuff, I was doing working for NASCAR. I did NASCAR.com out of the studios at Turner, and I was, when I first started dating Becky, and the first time I went back to her house, I had this stuff in my hair, and the next day she's like, "What the hell is on the pillow?" She's like, looked like someone spilled an Etch-A-Sketch. That's why eventually you just want to get the hair. Do what I did. It's less aggravation.
Oh, Willy Willy. That's what his name. Willy Willy.
Right.
Oh, how far you've come, Mike Bennett.
Yes, but it does work. I mean, the stuff, it's called Topics for guys that are going thin if you don't want to go for the real deal. And you're looking at me. If you got an appearance or some of you on a date with a girl, just don't let her run her fingers through your hair, because all of a sudden she's going to be like, ew, what's that?
Yeah, it's called that Beijing. I'll let that Beijing get caught there in the rain. You look like it does not look good.
We don't want something about Mary's situation.
There you go. Now, there's some guy talk and some recommendations. There's something about Mary we could all use. Hey, man. Oh, is that hair gel? It is Dukes and Bell. This hour of the show, guys, is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Coming up. All right, so Albert Breer's got more insight on what would maybe happen with Kirk Cousins. Here's the question. Can we live with Kirk Cousins as a Falcon this year? That's what we're going to get into next on Dukes and Bell.